And now another edition of the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
On Capitol Hill, the Democrats cave into pressure and remove the timetable for withdrawal from the Iraq spending bill. And, of course, they claim it's a legislative victory. Plus, Congress hears another witness, we've lost count of how many, from a former Justice Department official about the fired federal prosecutors in Kentucky. Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher, whose term has been riddled with controversy, is the latest political Lazarus. A political analyst in Kentucky will tell us why. And on the 2008 campaign trail, New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson makes his presidential bid official. If you have questions about the Democrats' compromise, about former Justice Department lawyer Monica Goodling's testimony on the Hill, or about the rest of the week in politics, give us a call. If you're from Kentucky, did you vote to reelect Governor Ernie Fletcher? Why or why not? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. And joining us, as he does every Wednesday, is NPR's political editor and political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And the Democrats gave up on that key demand for the Iraq funding bill, a timetable for withdrawal. This was the defining issue that they think brought them to power into Congress. This is splitting the party.
Right. There are a lot of Democrats not happy about this at all. Many Democratic candidates for president have criticized it. John Edwards said today that he said it's not a compromise, it's a capitulation. Basically, the Democrats knew that they didn't have enough votes to override a second Bush veto, and so they passed it the first time with a timetable. Bush vetoed it. Now that they got that out of the way, they need to do some kind of thing that would fund the troops. They want to do this before the Memorial Day break, congressional break. And Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, even though she helped engineer this compromise, she said herself that she would not vote for it because she would not vote for anything that without a timetable. The Democratic Party is split on this.
And I think one of the anti-war congresswomen said, look, this is a Republican bill. They can pass it with Republican votes. We're not going to vote for it.
Well, but again, they also gave some of the anti-war Democrats a little appeasement here, a little way out, because there's a second vote in the House when the vote is expected to come tomorrow, and that will be on increasing the minimum wage, more domestic spending, things like that. Both of those parts of the bill, the no timetable and the increased domestic spending, will be in the House bill, and the Senate will vote on it probably Thursday night or Friday.
So it looks like it might be able to get through before the Memorial Day recess.
That's what it looks like, that President Bush will sign it. Now, some Democrats say this is a victory in a sense because the President Bush will have to report back to Congress in July and September, talk about whatever benchmarks put on the Iraqi government for some progress. Ultimately, I still think that the Democrats will win in the end, in the sense that as we get closer to 2008, it's hard to see more and more Republicans continually to vote for these kind of bills, for, you know, almost like a stay the course kind of bill. But mm-hmm. Right now, the White House claims victory, and I think there's some justification to that.
Yesterday, the state of Kentucky held its primary elections, and Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher won his party nomination. He was originally elected on an anti-corruption platform, but was himself bogged down by allegations of ethics violations. Indeed, he was indicted for a misdemeanor. Joining us now is Al Cross, director of the Institute for Rural Journalism and Community Issues at the University of Kentucky. He joins us by phone from Lexington. Nice to have you on the program today.
Glad to be here, Neil. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Al.
And you'd think that the Governor Fletcher might have had some difficulties. He was, of course, faced a very strong opponent, the former member of Congress, Ann Northrup.
She lost her seat last fall, and it took her a couple of months to decide to get in this race, and I think those 2 months were critical. I think in those 2 months, Fletcher had time, once he had gotten this court case behind him, to use the powers of incumbency to solidify his support. And a former congresswoman from Louisville needs more than 4 months to get around the state and make connections to defeat an incumbent governor, no matter how weakened.
No matter how weakened, but she did run a lot of ads charging him with, the kitchen sink, I think.
Well, and she gained no traction at all. She basically ended this race where she started in terms of polling and vote, and it never really resonated with Republican voters, this notion that Fletcher could not win in the fall. Republicans had not had a governor here in 32 years, the longest hiatus of any state at the time, and they were standing by their guy. And he, in fact, appealed to their sympathy, saying he had been bullied by Democrats in a witch hunt. There was a famous ad in which a kid walks through the schoolyard representing Fletcher, and a follow-on ad in which a little girl in pigtails representing Northup joined the crowd.
Well, the big bully he's going to face in November is going to be former Lieutenant Governor Steve Beshear, himself somebody who's lost his last couple of elections.
Well, Steve Beshear has come back in an unusual way for a Kentucky politician. Usually there are no second or third acts in Kentucky politics, but here's a guy who won his last race 24 years ago when he was elected lieutenant governor. He lost the gubernatorial primary in 1987 and lost as the Democratic nominee to Senator Mitch McConnell in 1996. But after some other people, such as U.S. Representative Ben Chandler, Louisville Mayor Jerry Abramson, former Governor Brereton Jones, millionaire Charlie Owen did not run, Beshear stepped up, and he essentially bore the mantle of the traditional moderate wing of the Kentucky Democratic Party, the other wing being conservative.
And, of course, his victory is going to be a real gamble since he's casinos are his big issue.
It was his big issue at first, but as he got down to getting those socially conservative votes in western Kentucky and other places to put him over 40% and avoid a runoff, he didn't talk much about casinos.
Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Will, and Will is with us from Fort Mitchell in Kentucky.
Hi, Will.
Hello?
Hey, go ahead, Will.
Yeah, I just want to say that I'm from northern Kentucky. It's heavily Republican up here, but I voted for Ann Northrup. I'll tell you why. Is like your guest mentioned that, you know, we haven't had a Republican governor for a while, and that's not a good thing to have the same party in power for 32 years. But every governor that's been in, or you know, I mean, there's always some finagling going on with patronage jobs and that, but this was a little more outrageous, and it came from the governor's office itself. Usually, it comes from people that support them or something.
Usually, it's not as formalized as it was under Fletcher. Fletcher was under a lot of pressure from rural areas in particular to turn around some of these state highway garages and state park jobs that had long been supposed to be protected by civil service, but in practical terms were not. And that desire to turn that around led over into changing some more important jobs in Frankfort that should not have been messed with.
Right, exactly, and you know, he's a great campaigner, but this is a terrible smear on the Republican Party in Kentucky. It needs to be cleaned out, and you know, I wish he had not sought re-election. I think you'd be in a different ballgame because the demographics have changed. You know, you're getting more and more Republicans, people moving in the state with Toyota. There's a lot of big industry here. It's moving more towards Republicanism. As you know, we have two U.S. senators who are both Republican.
Well, will you vote for Fletcher in the fall?
No, I'm not sure. I have to really think about it. I don't know.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Ken?
Al, I was just going to ask you a question. Fletcher got 50% of the Republican vote in yesterday's primary. How well, what are his prospects of getting a united party behind him in November?
Well, getting 50% was a significant accomplishment for him. A lot of us were surprised in the end of that. But Northam has not yet committed to attend the unity rally that's supposed to be held on Saturday. My guess is that Mitch McConnell will call her up and say, you've got to do this for me, not for Ernie, because McConnell really wants a united party as he moves into re-election next year. He's got some real hot topics on his plate. They both begin with I, immigration, and Iraq as the Senate minority leader, and he is now serving two different constituencies, his fellow Republicans in the Senate and his voters in Kentucky, but it's those voters in Kentucky that he's got to think about as he moves to re-election next year.
A couple of emails from Kentucky. Mike in Louisville writes, I'm a registered Republican. I voted against Governor Fletcher in the primary. I think he is unelectable, and I was also disappointed with his advocacy of teaching intelligent design in our schools. Northrup, being from Louisville, was a long shot, but I had my fingers crossed for her. Catherine in Louisville wrote, I am a Louisville native who probably should have voted for Ann Northrup. She's Republican and female and from Louisville, but I could not get past her negative attacks on Fletcher. So some of those ads that she ran.
She makes a real good point. Northrup really failed to deliver a clear, positive message to the voters. They had heard all the stuff on Fletcher. I think she would have been better off to have made glancing references to that after making the initial point about its electability. People just wanted to hear something more positive and uplifting.
And do you have an early read on November? How does the race shape up between Beshear and the governor?
Well, the Democrats are clearly more united than the Republicans. Fletcher is still somewhat in the ditch politically, but I think he's pulled a couple of wheels out. He just gains a little bit of momentum as he goes along, has for the last 6 months, and this was a big move for him yesterday. But you have to remember that's only within his own party. It is a much greater challenge to keep those Democrats who crossed party lines to vote for him 4 years ago, many of whom are disappointed that a guy who ran on the promise of cleaning up Frankfurt made a mess of his own. I expect that he will campaign strongly against casinos and other social liberalism that he will say is represented by Bashir, and he will get a lot of attention and help from national party committees, as will Bashir, because this is really the only governorship that's going to be a true Republican versus Democratic contest, a fully contested race this fall.
Well, Al Cross, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Al Cross, director of the Institute for Rural Journalism and Community Issues at the University of Kentucky, and he joined us by phone from Lexington, Kentucky. We're talking with Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Another former governor is now, in fact, a sitting governor, started a race for president this week and began it with an ad that, well, he calls it the job interview.
Tell me what you did as governor in New Mexico.
Well, I used tax cuts to help create
over 80,000 jobs. Yeah, I saw that.
A lot of those jobs are
in high tech, helps the middle class.
Up to six in the nation for job growth.
Balanced five budgets, put over $600 million into classrooms, and cut school bureaucracy.
New Mexico was 46 in teacher pay. Now we're 29.
For what we're looking for, you might be a little overqualified.
Well, Bill Richardson would like to think that, and he's getting some traction early on in this race. Ken Rudin?
Yeah, a new poll came out today from Iowa, says that he's now into fourth place. Now, of course, you need to be first or second to have any kind of movement out of Iowa, but it's a big step for Richardson, who was an asterisk for the longest time. He's now with 10%, double digits. And he has several ads like this, and they're actually very funny to watch. There's one where he's having a job interview, and the interviewer is munching on a sandwich, completely bored and completely disinterested in what Richardson's accomplishments are. But when you look at his, 14 years in Congress and Secretary of Energy under Bill Clinton and UN Ambassador and two-term Governor of New Mexico, you compare him to some others who may have less experience and say, well, this guy has a well-rounded resume. Maybe he is a factor. Plus the fact that he's the only Hispanic in the race, the only Westerner in the race. And given the fact so many Hispanics are in California, Nevada, Florida, Texas, early primary states, he could theoretically be a factor.
And interesting news out of Iowa today as well. A memo leaked out of Hillary Clinton's campaign suggesting that maybe Iowa's not the best place for her to run.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people dismiss that. We saw that. And ultimately, she probably will run in Iowa. We've seen that people who have bypassed Iowa in the past, like Wesley Clark 4 years ago, John McCain in 2000, ultimately it's not the right decision. You really need to start from the beginning and contest in all the primaries and caucuses, starting with Iowa.
Email question from Peggy. Why do you suppose the time is ripe for moving up primaries? I don't recall this happening before.
Well, they've always been moving it up, but never to this extent. I mean, once upon a time, like go back to 68, 70, it would start in February or March and go through June. Remember Bobby Kennedy in California, Barry Goldwater winning in California, Gary Hart and Walter Mondale fighting out in California in June. But because the nominations are decided earlier than ever, a lot of the states wanted to move up earlier than ever. But with 22 states now perhaps preparing to have primaries and caucuses on February 5th, first of all, the nomination will be over by then, my guess is. Mm-hmm. And two, these later states, I mean, there'll be the most boring time between February 5th and the late August conventions. Something is going to have to stir up the interest of the American voters. And given the fact that the nominations should be over very early, I think it's a mistake, actually.
Well, let's see if we get a caller on the line. This is Natalie. Natalie with us from Davis, California.
Thanks so much for taking my call. My question's actually about the supplemental funding bill. My congressman is one of the Blue Dog Dems, and I'm wondering what part the fiscally conservative Blue Doggers played in this whole negotiation, and how should we anticipate their votes looking?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess
this is on the Iraq funding bill, but
right.
go ahead.
But let me just say one quick thing about this is very interesting. Iraq was supposed to be a winning issue for the Democratic Party. We saw it in November 2006, and yet the Democrats seem to be split on this, just like immigration was supposed to be a Republican issue, and Republicans were split on immigration. But having said that, I think the Blue Dogs, the conservative Democrats, really push this thing along with the folks in the Senate, John Warner in the Senate. They wanted it passed. They didn't want another presidential veto. And ultimately, you know, they could decide to renegotiate the whole thing this summer. But for them to pass, for the money to go to the soldiers before Memorial Day, as the Democratic leadership insisted on, they had to have a bill that did not have a timetable. And these Blue Dog Democrats most likely will vote for it.
Yikes. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Natalie. And Ken, it was that issue of you're starving the troops of funds, bullets and beans at a critical moment in the conflict. That's the issue that the Democrats wanted to avoid.
And it seemed to have worked for the president. It seemed like that was the issue that sold. I mean, there are people like Chris Dodd running for president, John Edwards running for president, said, this is a big mistake. Just keep sending it back to the president. Keep sending it back with a timetable. Let him keep vetoing and let the American people decide who's at fault. But ultimately, if you look at, I guess, the national polls or whatever, the feeling was that the Bush argument, meaning that this is jeopardizing the taking care of the troops in Iraq, that's the argument that won out overall.
And an email from Amy in Tulsa, Oklahoma, going back to the fired U.S. attorney's issue. Are we ever, she asks, going to see Karl Rove's emails?
Well, it doesn't sound like it, although once upon a time we didn't think we'd hear from Monica Goodling, the latest Monica to upset a White House. She testified today before the House Judiciary Committee, and she almost seemed like Reese Witherspoon watching her little, you know, like, well, mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, a kid, and I'm fairly excited about working for the president. But I think Karl Rove, it's one thing to have Monica Goodling on the witness stand. Karl Rove and his emails, I would think you're not going to see him.
All right. Thanks very much. Ken Rudin, our political junkie, here with us in Studio 3A, as he is everywhere. Wednesday for our Political Junkie segment. You can read his column of the same name at our website at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
White and blue, I want to grow up to be a politician.